Before we start, just a few housekeeping items. First, our listener survey. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this season on Girls. If you fill out our listener survey in the show notes of this episode, you can put your name in the drawing for a $100 gift card. We thank you so much for your feedback. Also, I'll be doing two live interviews at Foreign Policy's Her Power Summit on Thursday, including with the Deputy General of the UN. There are still virtual tickets available, so if you'd like to watch Her Power on Thursday, you can find the link in our show notes. Okay, now, on to the show. Baholo Kenewendo was the founder and president of the Model UN in Botswana, and from there, she became one of two youth representatives for Botswana, her home country, at the real United Nations. One of her tasks was to develop a resolution on youth, and especially what youth investments should fund. At the time, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon told her something that profoundly impacted her.
He sent us back in 2009, I think it was. He said, no, I need you to go back because your resolution does not have anything on climate change. And this is the real challenge for your generation. And that was the beginning of my really being switched on issues of climate change.
Now, Baholo Kenewendo is a special advisor and Africa director to the United Nations Climate Change High Level Champions, and she's also an economist. Today, she's a quite powerful person, and this all started because of experiences that she had as a girl. From Foreign Policy, I'm Rena Ninen. On today's episode of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, we're closing out our special season on girls with inspiring stories about girl power. You'll hear about Baholo's journey later in the show, but first, we go to Peru, where a former pop singer and social media sensation is finding a new way to lend her voice. Here's more from reporter Jimena Ledgard.
As a Peruvian, whenever I travel to other Latin American countries, I often get asked about three things: ceviche, Machu Picchu, and Wendy Sulca. From Mexico to Argentina, the entire region is still fascinated with her viral music videos. They feature a very young Wendy, no older than 6 or 7. She's dressed in colorful traditional Andean clothes, singing a popular style of music known as huayno, practiced mostly by Quechua people, indigenous to Peru's high-altitude mountain range. To say these songs were ahead in the odds is an understatement. They rack up tens of millions of views on YouTube, with people still commenting on them. At first glance, there isn't anything that unusual about Sulca's videos, other than the fact that she was a child lead singer, which was not common in huayno bands at the time. The lyrics, though, there's something else. In one of her most popular songs, Cerveza, a prepubescent Sulca sorrowfully demands a beer to soothe her broken heart. In another one, La Tetita, she sings about constantly wanting to drink her mother's breast milk, reminiscing about her toddler days when she could still drink it freely. Sulca was born into a family of folk musicians in Lima. Her early story is quite similar to that of thousands of second-generation immigrants whose parents arrived in the country's capital looking for opportunities. They tried to make a future for themselves in unbearably precarious conditions, often living in shacks with no running water or electricity. People were enthralled by the sheer bizarreness of her songs, but there was also plenty of racism and xenophobia at play. Sulca was a brown girl, singing in a style foreign to those outside of Andean countries. When I ask her about that period of her life, Sulca says she's learned to love that little girl. She's not embarrassed, not at all. She's proud.
Yo no me arrepiento de nada. Yo me siento super orgullosa de mis raíces, de mis inicios.
I don't regret anything. I'm extremely proud of my roots and my beginnings. I watch the videos and I see a little girl that was fighting next to her family, giving all she had to give.
Today, though, at 27, she's eager to reinvent herself. She's left behind the more traditional sounds of old-school huayno and embraces a more contemporary mix of traditional and urban jarras. She's collaborated with artists like renowned Colombian-Canadian musician Lido Pimienta, and she's become a feminist advocate. By all accounts, the situation is dire for Peruvian girls. More than 1 out of 10 girls and teenagers in Peru are pregnant or have already become mothers, and maternity rates for girls between 10 and 14 keep going up. Unlike other countries in Latin America, like Argentina or Chile, where gender and reproductive rights have enjoyed important wins in recent years, Peru is still lagging behind most of its neighbors. In a highly conservative Catholic country like Peru, Wendy Sulca is one of the few public figures advocating for abortion, which is illegal in Peru even after rape.
Creo que nadie está preparado para vivir esa situación.
Like most Peruvians, Sulca herself is Catholic. Yet, unlike most, she does not see a clash between her religious views and her stance on topics like abortion. In fact, quite the opposite. In a recent social media post, she asks, quote, "How often have we heard about abortions? We've judged them so many times without really knowing their stories. But we must cast judgments aside and support them in their decision. That is what loving thy neighbor is all about." End of quote. Her advocacy has not been without consequences. She recalls her mother having to field calls from her aunts and relatives, furious at their niece, demanding her mother step in and stop her.
Como artista, obviamente no me conviene porque...
As an artist, this is not in my best interest. People have different ways of thinking. And honestly, my family doesn't agree with me. But you have to stand for what you think is right. And I do believe women should have the right to choose.
As most women who are outspoken on social media know, though, you don't have to be Wendy Sulca to experience online backlash. It seems to come as an unnegotiable package. Have a voice, endure the harassment. Sulca is not an exception to this rule. Yet, the resilience she's developed in those early years seems to have given her an enviably thick skin, what we'd refer to in Peru as piel de chancho or pigskin.
Nacer también de una familia humilde te hace pisar tierra siempre.
Being born into poverty keeps your feet on the ground for the rest of your life. I'm aware of these things because I've experienced so many shortcomings, discrimination, bullying, humiliation. I've endured so many humiliations throughout my life, so I always try to put myself in the place of others because I've been there and I know it's not easy.
Besides abortion, Sulca has been an outspoken advocate for the LGBTQ plus community in Peru, which still faces significant challenges. Though being gay in Peru is not illegal in the country, same-sex civil unions are not legal, hate crimes often go unpunished, and the identity of transgender people is still not recognized. LGBTQ plus people are often mocked in the media and by politicians, with little to no mainstream pushback. In 2019, she released the song Chao Chao, or Bye Bye, a fusion reggaeton song analogous to Taylor Swift's Shake It Off. Tells haters their words and actions just slip off her, and wishes them the best. The video features local drag queens proudly dancing with Wendy to the song at a club. She says she wrote it for them and for all her fans in the LGBTQ+ community, with whom she feels an existential affinity.
Y ellos también siento que se identifican con mi historia.
I think they identify with my story because they've also been bullied. They've also endured discrimination and they've received and still receive so much hate. That's why they connect with me. Because I've been through the same thing, they identify with my experience.
Similar to other countries in the region, conservative and anti-rights groups have been consistently gaining ground in the past few years. Progressive and feminist legislation has been incredibly hard to pass or even place in the public agenda. Yet, the advocacy of public figures like Wendy with campaigns like Déjala Decidir, or Let Her Decide, and Niñas No Madres, Girls Not Mothers, have managed to help specific cases access justice through the Supreme Court and Ministry of Health, in the hopes this will set a precedent that can eventually turn into legislation. Brenda Álvarez, president of Proyecta Igualdad, a Peruvian feminist NGO, worked with Wendy on several of these campaigns.
Uno de los objetivos que se tuvo en esta campaña.
One of the goals of the campaign was to involve mainstream figures as a way to create a conversation. That's what we needed. to move the conversation beyond feminist or human rights circles.
The strategy paid off.
Una de las cosas que a nosotros nos pareció más, o sea, muy, muy increíble era que...
One of the most amazing things was how the campaign managed to reach media outlets that had never covered these topics. A human rights campaign is not likely to reach tabloids, but we did.
And we managed to move the needle when it came to support of the campaign.
We managed to get 300,000 signatures and were able to present it to Congress for legislative debate.
The most consequential of those cases is the one known as Caso Camila, of which Zulca helped spread awareness through videos and social media. Camila was an indigenous 13-year-old girl who had been sexually abused by her father since she was 9. She was not only denied a therapeutic abortion, the only instance in which terminating a pregnancy is legal in Peru, but she was also reported by the National Prosecutor's Office for the crime of auto-abortion after she miscarried in 2017. The Niñas Nomades campaign managed to get Camila's story to the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child. Last year, they determined the Peruvian state had violated several international conventions in its handling of the case. Zulca celebrated on social media and renewed her endorsement of the campaign. Perhaps most importantly, Wendy Zulca is spreading awareness beyond the usual activist and feminist spaces.
Como ella misma dice antes, no podía entender a las personas que accedían al aborto.
Her main message? There's no shame in embracing your past or what you stand for. Because Wendy Zulca knows something about being in the spotlight. It can be harsh, it can make you stick out from the crowd. But ultimately, with some strategy and luck, it brings power. For the Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, I'm Jimena Ledgard.
Up next, Habaholo Kenuendo became the youngest cabinet member in Botswana and one of the youngest in all of Africa, and how she's leveraged her leadership positions to change the lives of women and girls. More on that after the break.
Let's face it, money is the one subject we all need to deal with, but no one actually wants to talk about. The good news is there's a podcast helping you learn everything about money no one taught you. Meet Everyone's Talkin' Money, hosted by me, Shauna Game. Everyone's Talkin' Money focuses on relevant, inclusive, and forward-thinking conversations around money and just helps you get in a better relationship with your money no matter what your goals are. Do yourself a favor and subscribe to Everyone's Talkin' Money podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a podcast from Foreign Policy. I'm Rena Ninen. Before the break, we heard how Wendy Zulca became famous as a girl through her viral songs in Peru. Wendy now uses the media to advance issues for women and girls based on her experience in the spotlight as a child. Now we're turning to Boholo Kenuendo, the Special Advisor and Africa Director to the United Nations Climate Change High-Level Champions. Before that, she was the Minister of Investment, Trade, and Industry in Botswana. I wanted to first understand how her childhood shaped her into the political leader she's become.
I recall quite distinctly in 94, that's when I was starting to learn how to read. So in 94, I was able to open a newspaper and engage a little bit in a couple of sentences, or ask my father to read for me a couple of sentences. So I remember reading a little bit about what was happening in Rwanda, the genocide in Rwanda, and the slow responses coming out of the UN and the rest of the world. The responses internationally were not as strong as they should be, and how everybody must do something to save people's lives, that it stuck in my mind for the longest time. That when at some point when I was younger and I was asked, what do you want to do when you, what do you want to be when you grow up? My response was, I'm going to be the Secretary General of the UN so that I can save African lives.
A small little dream.
Yes.
And what ultimately moved you to become an economist?
I am laughing because this was just the happenstance, Serena. It was an essay competition. I was asked to write by a commerce teacher when I was 16. You have to write an essay on why do banks charge bank fees? And I wrote that essay quite reluctantly. And the prize was that I get to have dinner with the bank governor and the deputy bank governor. And then as a cherry that I found out that night was the president also showed up, who happened to be a trained economist at the time. And so everybody around the room were all economists. And so I thought, oh, if all the people that run Botswana are economists, then certainly this is something that I must study. So there was no professional career guidance of any sort. It was just a happenstance.
I love that story, Bahalo, because I think so much, I know personally for me, things that I was exposed to as a girl growing up had such incredible impact. Speaking competition, speech and debate that led me eventually to the path I chose. And it sounds like you were no different in childhood.
Yes, yes. It was at some point, and really credit to teachers. At some point, one of my teachers decided that I must put myself out there. And then I became so involved in so many things. And those things now, when I look back, they put me out there and opened me up to so many opportunities that have created this beautiful mural of a career and a life that I've had such a privilege to live.
I think you think it was some sort of mundane story about getting into becoming an economist, but I think it's so telling of the investment in girls early on in these competitions and programs, how transformational it can be in helping to select what career path they go down. So in 2016, then the president of Botswana, Ian Khama, nominated you to become a member of parliament. I mean, you weren't even 30 at that point. Tell me a little bit about that moment. Take me into the room when you got the call. They wanted to nominate you to be in parliament.
I was actually in Botswana for an event, and it was said over lunch quite nonchalantly, like, maybe you should become our next member of parliament. You keep saying these things. You keep talking about doing business environment and young people creating jobs and so forth. Maybe you should come in and do these things. And I laughed it off, like, oh, yeah, of course. And then when it actually eventually was brought as a serious topic, you know, I had several thoughts of, since I was 16 years old, I'd been working alongside the Botswana National Youth Council, thinking about the role of young people in decision-making at the highest level. And then this is the opportunity for me to participate.
Why do you think it was that they chose you?
There was a need for an economist in parliament. So I think at the time we had, the only economist was the Minister of Finance. And so they needed an additional skill in that space. And then it also helped that I was a young woman who had a policy background and that I was a young woman who had been working in advocacy for both young people and women and children. So I could bring in different skills. I could bring in a whole wealth of experience from a different point of view.
So in 2018, the new incoming president, Mohetsi Masisi, appointed you to be his Minister of Investment, Trade, and Industry. I mean, my gosh, you make me want to become an economist based on all these wonderful opportunities that have come your way. At that time, you were really barely in your 30s, the youngest cabinet member of Botswana, and some argue the youngest cabinet member in all of Africa. What was that moment like, and what were you hoping to achieve?
Well, that was a big moment. When the president called me and he said, I have decided to appoint you as the Minister of Investment, Trade and Industry. And he said, I have full confidence in you. Don't let me down.
No pressure there.
No pressure, no pressure. And so I asked, can I have further guidance? He said, no.
No guidance?
No.
What would you say is your proudest accomplishment as Trade Minister of Botswana?
So I can go through the big things, but the things I'm most proud of Rena are much smaller than that. But for me, they represent exactly what politics means to me. We would go to villages and do smaller business drives, micro business drives. And the first time we introduced these smaller packages, micro businesses in a village, went there and we introduced to this cohort of women. I went back about 3 months later to this particular village. And this lady was so excited to show me her house. She said, no, I need you to, I want to host you for tea at my home. So she was so proud that she had electricity in her house. And it was because of the initiative that we had brought to her village a couple of months earlier. And there's several of these stories that are so personal and so dear to me. And those are my highlights.
What were your biggest challenges?
Oh, so many. One was during my first week, I found out that I was also the chair of the Council of Ministers of Trade for SACU, so the Southern African Customs Union. And in my first week in the role, I showed up in Namibia for the SACU meetings, and my first 10 minutes walking through the door, a minister from a certain country immediately says to me, can you chop, 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 can you bring the tea, please?
They sent that to you. They asked you to bring them tea.
Immediately. I just stood there. I stood there for 2 seconds and then collected myself and walked right in his path. And just before I said, actually, I'm not here to make you tea, another minister turned around and said, oh my God, you are in trouble now. So this minister said, I think it's time for you to resign because this is a true sign that you are too old.
And what was his reaction when he was told you are now too old, this is your chair?
He just said, no way, really? Yes. And, you know, it just got awkward. But, you know, we went on to have a very awkward first encounter. And I can tell you that he was not around for our next meeting.
Interesting. How did you make the economic case for investing more in women and girls, including to male politicians as well?
Things that were within my ministry, I felt like I didn't need to convince anybody. They were starting to really actively look at the gender dynamics at play at different levels, even within the ministry. And then at government level, at cabinet level, we continuously engaged with other ministers and other members of parliament on the bills that they were bringing to parliament and asked the relevant questions around the protection of women and children. And I would raise motions that were related to women and children and really during our party caucus, seek support, really point to it that this is not only about women, you know, if we promote safety and security for women and children. It's about safety and security for everybody. Women-owned businesses thriving doesn't take away from your business thriving. So it just goes on to make much more better economic sense. And any reforms that we make tailored for the vulnerabilities or difficulties that are faced by women or women-owned businesses or agency that is tailored for women, they are easily scalable or replicatable towards any other sector of society. But having the backing of strong women groups from Botswana and other political parties was really good, UNICEF, and having the backing of the president and the vice president was really helpful because it helped to get the motion across the line and most importantly, to turn the motion into a bill that now is a law.
And that wraps up our special series on girls. Our thanks for listening to the amazing reporters and experts on this season. We'll likely have a bonus episode soon, so stay tuned for that. We'll be back in your feed in the fall with brand new episodes all about women's leadership. And honestly, we already have a stellar lineup of guests. We're excited about this one. More on that soon. And that does it for today's show. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is a production of Foreign Policy and is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Roberta Buffett Institute for Global Affairs at Northwestern University. The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women is hosted by me, Rena Ninen. Laura Rosbrow-Tellum is our senior producer. Rob Sachs, our managing director. Thanks for listening and be well.